Good morning and welcome to Corporations and Democracy, a program that explores issues of community democracy and what we the people are doing to create sustainable democratic alternatives to corporate control. From the Philo Studio, I'm your host, Linda McClure. Before we start the show today, I want to make a comment on the last show, last month. We did a show on the census, and a call that came in toward the end of the show asked about the occasion during World War II when the census material was used to locate and round up Japanese Americans, and our the county staff who was here, Julie, I'm blanking on her last name right now. Great woman, works for the county. Anyway, she wasn't aware of that information. So she did research and contacted me and asked to please let folks know that, yes, indeed, during World War II in the Washington, D.C. area, the census material was used to locate Japanese Americans. However, since that, they realized that that just can't happen. They have put additional safeguards on now, and not since World War II has that happened, and she felt very secure in saying the safeguards that are in place now will not come down, and again, the census, I won't go into a lot of detail about that because we did a show on that, but she did want me to pass on that. So, our guest today is Paul Cienfuegos. He's a national leader in the community rights movement, which works to dismantle corporate constitutional so-called rights and assert the people's inherent right to self-government. In preparation for the show, I asked Paul what the latest was in his national organizing, and he replied with the perfect introduction to his work. He said, "The rabbles are rising from Sparta, Wisconsin to Grant Township, Pennsylvania to the voters of Toledo, Ohio. Locals are becoming increasingly unwilling to abide by our nation's structures of law that say you can't protect your own community's health, safety, and welfare because that would violate the state's right to preempt you or a corporation's so-called constitutional right to contaminate your water or big box your town or factory farm your landscape. Enough." So, with that, good morning, Paul. Are you on?
I am.
In doing your introduction, I talked to you a little bit about, actually, I read what you had emailed me when I asked what's going on. I thought that was a great introduction. And so let's start with you telling us a bit about where, about what led you to your work with Citizen Democracy and what's been your history and your path to get where you are now.
Well, that's kind of a long story. Let's see how to make it really quick. I spent about 15 years doing single-issue activism from forest protection to anti-nuclear power and nuclear weapons work straight out of college in the mid-70s, mid to late 70s. And in the early 90s, I ran across the work of the Program on Corporations Law and Democracy and had a major aha moment and realized that virtually all of the work that I'd ever done as a local organizer was a mere symptom of corporate rule. And it was kind of a shock to my system, and I started learning from the Program on Corporations Law and Democracy and the work of Richard Grossman and Jane Ann Morris and others, and started Democracy Unlimited of Humboldt County in 95, I think, and it's just kind of taken off from there. I've been involved in the community rights movement challenging corporate constitutional rights pretty much since 95 and as close to full time as I can.
Well,
so that's now some 30 plus 35. Oh my gosh, 05, about 35. 28, 29 years. Am I doing the math right?
That's about right. Yeah, I know that you came to Mendocino County for the first time, to do your work in the mid-90s, mid-late 90s. And out of your workshop that you did in Ukiah, people from all over the county came. There were three chapters of Alliance for Democracy that formed as a result of it. And I believe I tried to reach Jim Tarbell to ask about the origins of this show, but I believe since it was Tom Wodetsky and Jim Tarbell and some of the other folks there on the coast who started the show, I think your work inspired this show.
That's amazing if it's true. I know that both Jim and Tom came to one of my first workshops on the coast, if I remember right.
Right, yeah.
As did Jan Evans and Dill and, yeah.
Yeah.
The man who became
Tony.
The mayor of Fort Bragg came to one of my full-day workshops. I forget his name. Anti-corporate activist.
Yeah. So what do you think most people in this country know about constitutional authority, and what should they know?
Well, I wish that they knew more than they knew, and I knew almost nothing when I got involved in this work in the mid-90s, but I think the most striking thing that everybody really should know is that we, the people, are the sovereign people constitutionally, which means that we have the authority to rule, and that government, all levels of government, and all of the parts of government are subordinates and are required to serve us and have duties and responsibilities to we the people, and that we charter business corporations and nonprofit corporations historically to serve us, and that they are subordinate to we the people, and were historically created uniquely one at a time by state legislatures after the American Revolution with long lists of requirements and prohibitions. And if they violated those charters, their directors could be imprisoned and their corporations could be dissolved and assets seized by the state. So constitutionally, it's quite a revolutionary structure of law. But of course, that's not what it feels like for anybody living today in the United States other than maybe the 1%. Feels like just the reverse.
It does. And I don't think people truly understand the constitutional structure that we're on the top and we authorize government to carry out day-to-day activities to run the government, and they authorize businesses to serve the people. And that's really been turned, that pyramid's been turned on its head.
And maybe one of the most significant turning upside downs is the origins of the regulatory arena of law, state and federal regulatory agencies, where up until the 1880s, corporations were required to serve one specific social need and cause no harm. As the Industrial Revolution was taking off, it was no longer possible politically and legally for there to be laws on the books that said corporations can't cause harm. So all of a sudden, the powers that be decided that we would go from prohibiting corporate harm to regulating corporate harm. And that's the birth of the regulatory movement in their agencies in the 1880s, thanks to private meetings between the U.S. Attorney General at the time and the heads of the railroad industry, who were the first giant corporations in the United States. And so all of a sudden we have regulatory agencies that are now giving permits to corporations to cause a certain amount of harm legally and to make that all the new normal.
Is there a place for regulatory agencies?
I don't think there is. I think we're stuck in a paradigm where we think that it's normal to regulate a harmful corporate behavior. And I think most single issue activists are completely stuck in that paradigm. Sierra Club and Food and Water Watch and other major groups continue to battle regulatory agencies and try to strengthen their regulations rather than saying rather than asking the big question, is it even legitimate for corporations to harm us and to not be under our authority? And so when you hear single-issue activist leaders, which I do every week, say so-and-so corporation has seized that regulatory agency that regulates it, that's actually false history. These agencies were created to serve corporations starting in the 1880s, and they've been doing a good job ever since. So I can imagine that we might have an environmental protection agency that prohibits corporate harm, or a National Labor Relations Board that prohibits harm against employees and gives employees actual rights, recognizes actual constitutional rights. But it's hard to really envision saying, you know, a certain amount of parts per million of radiation shall be allowed to leak out of this power plant, or a certain amount of parts per million of this carcinogenic chemical should be allowed in the following products, or should be allowed to be dumped in the air and the water through this industrial process. I mean, that's basically what the regulatory state is. I don't see a point of it. But, of course, if we want to live in a modern industrial state where poisons are just kind of the normal cost of doing business, then, yeah, we're going to end up where we are, and we're going to end up destroying all life on the planet, which is where we're headed.
Way too fast. So what do your workshops look like? What would someone come away with after attending a workshop?
Well, they're really paradigm-shifting workshops. People are usually blown away by anything from my evening workshop to my weekend training. They learn that there is now a community rights movement that's more than two decades old in the United States that helps local communities and counties to pass these extraordinary community rights laws, which do three things. They strip business corporations of all of their so-called constitutional rights, free speech rights, property rights, access to the judicial system rights, etc. They enshrine the right of that community or county to govern itself and protect its own health and welfare. And they push back on the state's claim that it has the authority legitimately to preempt a community from protecting itself, which is completely insane. And you have state regulatory agencies all over the United States telling local communities, you don't have the right to stop this harmful corporate activity in your town. You know, you've got, right now you've got the Ohio Department of Environmental Protection suing Toledo, Ohio, that's trying to protect the ecological integrity of Lake Erie. You know, it's like, it's supposed to be, and activists think, oh, well, it's not the Department of Environmental Protection for Ohio isn't doing its job. Well, actually, that's exactly the problem. It is doing its job. It's doing its job to protect corporate polluters in the state of Ohio. So it's really quite a draconian situation. And people come out of the workshops realizing that the only way to protect working people's rights and environmental rights and targeted minorities' rights is to step outside of these structures of law that have been hidden in plain sight for a very long time, and to pass laws that directly challenge these structures of law and say that they're unjust and illegitimate because they violate our rights. You know, a lot of these laws were written by people who've been dead for a century, and yet we're told there's nothing we can do about it. It's pretty absurd.
So what are the organizing campaigns you're working on now?
I got my hands in too many places, as usual.
I'm surprised.
I am spending an inordinate amount of time these days in the Midwest, mostly in rural Wisconsin and Iowa. I'm on my something like 25th or 30th visit, believe it or not, since 2013 to rural Iowa, Wisconsin, Minnesota. Just in the last couple of weeks, for example, went up to Monroe County, Wisconsin, to the town of Sparta to help a community group to try to force their local county to stop working on writing a regulation that would regulate frac sand mines, and instead they're demanding that the county pass a community rights ban on further frac sand mines. There are already 8 mines in the county. They're already doing significant harm to air and water. And so that campaign is really active, and it's in this tiny little county with very tiny population, very tiny base of financial support for the county. I attended, you're going to love the name of this committee, on Monday a night with about 15 members of the local community rights group. I attended a meeting of the Committee on Sanitation, Planning, Zoning, and Dog Control.
Interesting conglomeration.
Yeah, that's how tiny the town, the county government is. I'm also working actively to support some folks up in northern Wisconsin in the town of, I'm not even sure how to say the name. It looks like Chicago, but there's no letter at the end. Chicago. It's the Chicago Town Board in Washburn County in northern Wisconsin. And that group wrote a climate bill of rights to give the local town the legal authority to pass laws to protect the climate at the local level. They launched their campaign 6 or so months ago, and I'm going to be going up there in a couple of weeks and leading another workshop. I was just in Madison a couple of days ago giving a presentation to the Bernie group that in Wisconsin is called Our Wisconsin Revolution, OWR. And so they already are involved in electoral work as Bernie Sanders supporters, and they are very excited about the possibility of using these locally enforceable community rights laws to pass laws in Madison or in their county, Dane County. For example, I was pointing out to them Wisconsin, Iowa, and some other state legislatures in the last few years have taken away local government's right to pass a higher minimum wage than the state minimum wage, if you can imagine. In both of these states, the higher minimum wage locally had been passed earlier and implemented, and people were making the higher minimum, and then the state legislatures took it away, and people dropped back to a lower wage, if you can imagine what an insult that is to people. And so I was pointing out a couple nights ago in Madison that they could pass a community rights ordinance that restored the higher minimum wage and stripped the state of Wisconsin of their authority to nullify the community's local minimum wage laws. So, I mean, these are the kinds of powerful things that we can be doing. And finally, I was just in Monroe, Wisconsin, Greene County. I've started working in the last 6 months with the Wisconsin Farmers Union, that is a very big and active political movement of anti-corporate farmers. And they're working on all sorts of issues at the state level. I was one of their keynote speakers at their annual conference in Wisconsin in February, and I'm now getting actively involved with the Greene County chapter of the Wisconsin Farmers Union, working on a whole variety of ideas for local ordinances there. So, I mean, that's just kind of the tip of the iceberg.
So what kinds of legal challenges have you had to deal with?
Well, I'm kind of lucky in the sense that up until a handful of years ago, when I was still working actively in coordination with the Community Environmental Legal Defense Fund, CELDEF, I would do the early sparking work in a community, and then CELDEF would help a community go through the law part of the campaign. And in the last handful of years, as we had parted ways, I now am doing kind of the whole piece. But it's so difficult to get, let's see, how do I say this? Iowa and Wisconsin are both states where neither state allows local ballot initiatives or state ballot initiatives the way that we take for granted in the West Coast states. And so I've helped communities to rev up their community rights campaigns in more than a dozen counties now in these two states. And they run very functional campaigns, and then they hit the barrier of the local town or city or county government, which is unwilling to consider their ordinance request. And so the campaign just dies, at which point what I have then been urging in my organizing work is that people try to knock these local elected officials out who are refusing to protect health, safety, and welfare within a community. And I think I've probably helped maybe more than a dozen people to win local elected office in the last few years in mm-hmm. these two states.
Mm-hmm.
And so in most cases, we have to actually build enough support for new candidates before we can even have a serious chance of winning one of these votes. But I think that when I was up in Monroe County in Sparta just a couple of days ago, I got this distinct impression that that group was going to actually believe that they had the votes in the County Board of Supervisors to get a community rights ordinance passed. So, I mean, that's really the state that we're in. And I'm working with local elected officials informally all over the region, and we're planning to hold a day-long gathering of local elected officials in October, probably, when I'm next back here, to try to figure out how to build more of a solidarity network between the local groups and to help one local or county government push through our first community rights ordinance in this region. This is a very difficult area to be organizing because almost all of the local government officials are good old boys who have the same name, same last name as everybody else who's been in office for generations. They aren't really serious campaigns. And in most of these local communities, a woman has never successfully won a race, like literally never.
Hmm. They're challenging areas, eh?
Yeah. So it's really, we're focusing on culture shift to a large degree, which is actually really exciting to kind of get people. It's like we don't have a single win yet in a city or county council, but we have this transformative conversation that's now happening after 6 years of coming to this region and leading workshops and consultations. So the conversation is shifting in communities, even if we haven't won anything yet.
So you're out in these counties and states that are not as progressive as the West Coast, where you're rooted in. How do you see the mood of the country changing since you started doing national outreach?
That's an interesting question. I mean, I think there's been a really big change since Trump got elected, obviously. I think, up until that point, progressive movements at least believed that we could affect real social change at the federal level and sometimes at the state level. And I think now that that is feeling like an impossibility at the moment, progressive movements are finally paying a lot more attention to local organizing. And I think also the climate emergency is causing people across the political spectrum to really rethink how much time we have to affect significant social change. I've even been hearing from local organizers. I just yesterday on the phone, I was talking to someone in Ontario, Wisconsin, a tiny, very conservative town, where she's been wanting to bring me there for more than a year, and she's never really felt like the conservative culture of the town would pay any attention to me coming to give a presentation. And she called me yesterday and said, something profound has shifted in our community in the last few months, where people are finally starting to understand that it doesn't matter which political party you're affiliated with, our government is not serving us. And we have to start doing something much more drastic to get our basic governing authority back. And that's my experience, too, that, it's been just so long that conventional single-issue groups are terrified of stepping outside the box and doing anything bolder than just pleading with elected officials or marching or picketing or, online petitions. And something big is happening in the culture, I think, for a whole variety of reasons. I mean, I'm completely freaked out about the climate emergency, as many people are.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, as well, we all should be. It's, yeah. So if you're listening and would like to call in and have a question, the number is 895-2448. So as far as our nation and things that are going on now, Has the rise of white supremacy had an effect on what you see out there, and the Black Lives Matter, the Me Too, the students on gun control, those other countering movements, immigrants' rights? Have any of those things, you think, played into the work you're doing?
I don't think that they have actually particularly played into the work that I'm doing. Seem like an odd answer. I mean, I'm looking at an ordinance that our movement drafted last year that no community has gone to use yet, called a Sanctuary from Official Violation of Rights Ordinance. It's a rights-based ordinance reaffirming and securing fundamental civil rights within a municipality by enacting a community bill of rights that prohibits government profiling, targeting, discrimination, or deportation based solely on perceived or actual immigration status and religious belief. That's one of the directions our movement has been heading lately. This is one of our newest drafts that hasn't yet been passed by a community. There's also, I understand there's a group somewhere in, I believe, in Michigan that's working on a police oversight community bill of rights that would finally achieve subordinating the police forces to the citizenry of a local community, which is way overdue. You know, the movement has so far been very environmentally focused, with one exception being a worker bill of rights, which also has not successfully passed in any community, although Spokane, Washington has tried hard to pass it. I think those social movements, no, I would say mostly they have not, they and we have not interacted as much as I would like to see.
I want to touch back on, you talked about electing local officials that will carry on community rights issues. Just want to let people know that Mendocino Women's Political Coalition is doing a campaign training. There's a session they're both on Saturdays, a session in June and a session in July that go together. You should go to both. And not only people who are interested in running for office, but people who want to help other people who are running for office and familiarize yourself with what a political campaign looks like. So if anyone has an interest, because really we have to get good people into elected office. We've seen the difference in the Democratic, the new Democrats that came in last year, how they're rattling the establishment cages big time. And it's the steps that we need to take, especially women of color, especially young people. So if anyone's interested in campaign training, you can email me, Lynda, Lynda, at pacific.net, and put in the subject campaign training, and I can give you more information about that. So we are seeing unprecedented erosion in public safeguards for health, safety, labor, the environment, financial institution practices. But laws can be changed, agency directors can be changed, regulatory agencies can change regulations, all rather quickly, as we've seen with the Trump-Pence administration. What can be done about the current administration's judicial appointments, and how do conservative judges' impact on citizen democracy?
Oh, such an interesting question.
I know if there's any legal challenges, that would be one thing.
You know, I'm somebody who regularly points out that we really shouldn't even have a United States Supreme Court, because our United States Supreme Court really plays the role of our king, right? They can't be fired. Their decisions can't be appealed. They can serve until they die. I mean, a democratic republic doesn't have a place for a body that has those powers. And in fact, there is no other country in the world that has a Supreme Court with those kinds of ultimate powers that overrule the other two branches. So I'm kind of shocked that our movements have not been calling for profound changes in our court system. Again, structural changes. I mean, obviously it's a crisis around around reproductive rights and gay rights and others for us to have the court that we have, and it's conceivable that Trump will get to appoint another judge before his term is up or before he's impeached, which is all very scary. But I think we need to really be thinking about the structural changes of democracy more than just our concern about individual judges. That's not really probably the answer that you're looking for.
No, I'm looking for what your opinion is, and,
and
I respect your perspectives tremendously, because you do come from a paradigm shift that most of us struggle with. So your perspectives are, I think, very encouraging.
So can I just kind of give a couple of examples of,
sure.
of kind of the problem with the judicial branch?
Sure.
In general?
Mm-hmm.
So there's two particular campaigns that are making real waves in the community rights movement right now in the United States, and both are being attacked by the judicial branch. In Grant Township, Pennsylvania, a handful of years ago, a tiny little township of less than 1,000 residents banned an oil and gas company, Pennsylvania General Energy, from dumping hundreds of thousands of gallons of frack wastewater into a hole in the ground in their township, saying, we're not going to let you do this because you're dumping it less than a half a mile from our sole supply of drinking water. And the corporation sued, and it's been stuck in the courts for years, going back and forth with suit and countersuit. And ultimately, the Pennsylvania Department of Environmental Protection sued Grant Township, Pennsylvania, saying that its duties as a regulatory agency was being violated by this community. If you can imagine, right, Grant Township is simply trying to say, we don't want to be poisoned. We don't want our water permanently destroyed. And the regulatory agency, whose title is Environmental Protection, is suing the township, saying they're violating the regulatory agency's duty to do its job as an environmental protector, which had granted a permit to poison the township. And this is just classic. And every single decision that's been made by the judge is in the favor of the corporation. Corporation has even claimed that the lawyers on our side should be sued because they're defending a frivolous law. And once again, the judge has agreed. So in a situation like this, when we understand that we, the people, are the sovereign, and the government is required to serve us, and the judicial branch is government, I think it's really important that we start to really rethink, what do we do at that point? Do we sit on our hands and say the judiciary branch has acted and now there's nothing else we can do? Or do we take our authority back, as the people in Grant Township continue to do year after year, and say, we don't care if you sue us until we're completely bankrupt. We're not going to let you pour poison in the ground in our little township. So, you know, there's a judicial battle. And then the other one, real quickly, is that people may have heard of this other story, because it was one of the first real breakthrough stories in our movement in years, was the voters of Toledo, Ohio, a group called Toledoans for Safe Water, not that many months ago, passed a ballot initiative that created a Bill of Rights and Rights of Nature for all of Lake Erie. And it made international news, because it was a major Rights of Nature win. And immediately, a whole clump of corporations sued to stop it. And once again, the Ohio Department of Environmental Protection is now suing the city of Toledo, claiming that it's violating the regulatory agency's rights to so-called protect the state, but in this case to keep giving permits to corporations to poison Lake Erie. So once again, what do the people of Toledo do? Do they simply lose the lawsuit, which of course they're going to lose, and just sit on their hands and say, well, we gave it a good try? Or are people going to learn to start acting like a sovereign people and saying, excuse us, courts, but you're required to serve us, and you've made a mistake, in your judgment, and we will continue to act as if the law that we've passed is on the books, regardless of what you tell us. I mean, this is the paradigm shift that is urgently needed.
We have a call. Hello, caller. You're on the air.
Yes. Excellent discussion, and the topic is outstanding, along with the fact that the outstanding broadcast system that you're on right now has a politics, a love story that has, for this gentleman's probably delight, brought up the subject that we are going to try to pack the courts. We're going to try to get the Supreme Court, as he says, the Supreme King. We're going to try to get the Supreme Court packed, like FDR tried to. Otherwise, we're stuck with 30, 35 years, if we even last that long as a species with the heat coming. But the major thing is, there is an effort, and it's San Francisco State professor. I'm listening on the air, or I can listen on the phone.
I'm in total agreement with you, and it's really interesting that the Constitution allows us to have a Supreme Court of any size, that it doesn't say the court's supposed to be nine people, and FDR made that threat and got his New Deal passed simply by making the threat, and the Supreme Court backed off. Absolutely. But again, that, you know, the problem ultimately, I think, is bigger than just left versus right. It's top versus bottom.
Yes. And it's the fact that, unfortunately, Marx was wrong, that capitalism isn't just going to enslave mankind. It's going to end up destroying and withering the live earth. I appreciate
withering
your attitude and your opinion. Yes. And so thank you for your work. I'll turn the radio back on.
Thanks so much.
Yeah, if it's okay, can I talk for just a minute about the organization that I'm with? Because I'm realizing I haven't done that for most of the hour.
Excellent.
Okay, to give some contacts for this?
Yes, please do.
So I've been working now for many years with the community rights movement, but just a year and a half ago I founded with some other colleagues Community Rights US. The website is communityrights.us, www.communityrights.us rather than .org. And we have been working now for the last year and a half really intensively as a working board and staff on helping communities across the United States with these kinds of campaigns. We formed a national support organization for this movement. A few months ago, we loaded up on our website the first ever, amazingly enough, the first ever comprehensive searchable database of all the ordinances in our movement that have been passed at communityrights.us. You can see that list. And we've also launched this year a year-long series of events, and it'd be lovely if somebody listening wants to organize one of these in Mendocino County. 2019, amazingly enough, is the bicentennial of corporations winning constitutional rights. In 1819, in a court case in February of 1819, the Supreme Court first granted corporate rights in a decision regarding Dartmouth College. And so for all of 2019, we have organized something called Roasting 200 Years of Corporate Constitutional Rights, see how our rights have been usurped in plain sight and how we can take back local control. And we're helping communities all over the U.S. to organize little events of any kind to just note and commemorate and roast this bicentennial of corporations winning rights and making the claim that it's going to be the beginning of the end, finally. And one last thing that we're doing as Community Rights U.S. is a project that I've wanted to create for years is a photography exhibit of how corporations exercise their constitutional rights under our very noses all around us 24/7, and we don't even notice anymore. And that photography exhibit is now touring the United States. It's called Hidden in Plain Sight, And we've got a half a dozen sets of it around the U.S. And if anyone listening would like to host the exhibit in a local coffee house or cafe or library or college or high school campus or whatever, I'd love to hear from you about that, too.
Great.
And we'll send you the photo exhibit and you can post it.
Okay, we have one more call. Caller, you're on the air.
Thank you. The fact that white is a color makes the term people of color null and void. Electing better people, we are human beings and fallible. We all make mistakes. Like you did say, there are better people, perhaps. Let's say a Democratic government, we think, would be more open to all people, although Mr. Cienfuegos said we have come to the conclusion that neither one of these parties really is doing well by the people, we the people. So I don't know. For some reason, electing better people raises a red flag in my head or my heart or my gut. Thank you very much.
Thanks for your comment.
I'm not quite sure what she's quoting me saying. I do believe that both of the main parties have become completely for corporate money. But there certainly are insurgent candidates who have been winning seats all over on the progressive side. It's been very exciting to watch.
And again, I think the folks who are coming into Congress, the new wave of Democrats, are really shaking the system, I think, in a very good way. So
very exciting.
So what is on your schedule coming up? What are you, what are your future plans?
Well, I'm only in the Midwest for another couple of weeks. I have a couple more workshops here. I am a backpack fanatic, so I'm coming home to the Northwest for the summer to do a whole bunch of nature time. And I will be back here for much of the fall, based in Monroe, Wisconsin, and with the goal of trying to get a community rights ordinance passed somewhere in this region by fall or winter after 6 years of intensive teaching and organizing work. This is kind of my passion and life work at this point. Been doing it for more than 20 years.
And how do you keep your spirits up? What do you find encouragement with?
I struggle with that a lot. I'm no longer a young guy. I'm 61. And I think if I wasn't so freaked out about the ecological crisis on the planet, I'd probably have higher spirits these days. But I'm of the belief that we probably have all of 5 or 10 or 20 years left before, regardless of what we do, the planet is no longer supporting the life forms that are currently here. And so there's definitely a part of me that struggles every day to even do the work that I am doing, given that it's structural change work that takes time. And so sometimes I think that at a minimum, the work that I'm doing will at least help communities to collapse more democratically as systems collapse around us, so that we're in less civil war and more democratic, peaceful collapse. At a minimum, I also should say that I continue to believe that the community rights strategy offers the best option for how to deal with the climate emergency, and I think that the Green New Deal, which is a very exciting concept, I think both of these movements are making a big mistake if, once again, all they're doing is demanding change at the federal level, which is pretty rigidly stuck on bold change that's necessary. And I think that cities, towns, and counties could be passing radical Green New Deal and climate change ordinances through the community rights lens very rapidly, and that those could make a huge difference as well. And so I'm putting a lot of my work these days into convincing Green New Deal and climate activists to really focus on local community rights lawmaking and not just pleading with elected officials, which I think we've been trying for far too long and it hasn't worked.
So could you give us contact information one more time and then we'll wrap up.
Sure. So I'm the founding director of Community Rights US, and our website site is communityrights.us as opposed to .org. My email is paul@communityrights.us. You can check us out on Facebook. I have a Patreon page. You can go to the Community Rights TV channel on YouTube to watch videos. You can check us out on Podbean and watch and listen to our audios, Community Rights on Podbean. We're all over the place. Community Rights US, communityrights.us.
Googling your name brings up a lot, too.
It sure does.
Yes, and it's Paul, PaulCienfuegos. Is that right?
That's right. That's right. But probably easier to just go to communityrights.us.
That's probably
the starting place.
Well, as always, Paul, it's a delight to talk with you. I am always so impressed with the work that you're doing and the impact it's had on my life. So thank you.
A pleasure always to talk to you, Linda.
All right. Take good care.
And everybody at KZYX.
Yeah. Thank you.
All right. Thanks a lot.
Bye now.